The ETF Edge podcast is sponsored by Invesco QQQ, supporting the innovators changing the world. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Welcome to ETF Edge, the podcast. If you're looking to learn the latest insights on all things exchange-traded funds, you're in the right place. Every week, we're bringing you interviews, market analysis, and breaking down what it all means for investors. I'm your host, Bob Pisani. From 5% yields to active management and the upcoming tax season, we're going deep into new bond strategies with Tony Rocchi, Managing Director and Global Head of ETFs at Morgan Stanley, and Joanna Galagos, co-founder of BondBlocks. Tony, you launched, two big active fixed income mutual funds last week. But before we get to that, let's answer the question. These 4 to 5% treasury yields everyone's falling in love with, are they going to continue into 2024?
Look, at 4 to 5%, that's an attractive yield. This is the first time bonds are back, right? People are very interested. We're seeing it in fixed income ETF flows. Last year, a third of all flows into the ETF category went in to bond ETFs. So investors are expressing a view, whether it's an institutional investor or a self-directed investor through fixed income ETFs. Now, do we maintain 4 to 5%? Tough to say. We'll see if rates actually get cut, perhaps as early as June.
Now, you launched an old-fashioned bond pick and ETF last week. Eaton Vance, you own Eaton Vance, those of you who don't know that. Total return, it's EVTR, is that right?
Yes,
EVTR is the symbol for that. Tell us what goes on in that.
Yeah, so this is a best ideas portfolio. Almost a third of the fixed income category, Bob, is actually core and core plus. So this is really a best ideas portfolio. We actually converted a mutual fund, which we launched in 1984. It's a four-star Morningstar performance, but we converted to an ETF right here on the floor of the exchange.
That's a good point.
Yeah, last Monday.
Now, is this very broad in terms, like an LQD thing, where you're picking treasuries and you're picking munis and
you're
picking
corporates? It's much broader. It's, you know, right now a 6-year duration, about a 6.6% yield. But again, it's
6.6.
Yes, but it's a best ideas portfolio.
Yeah, and you also launched a short municipal. ETF.
Yeah, shorter on the duration.
This is a conversion, too, as well, right?
Exactly. We also converted a municipal bond mutual fund last Monday here at the NYSE to an ETF, symbol EVSM. And that's a municipal, again, 3.5% yield, almost a 6% taxable equivalent yield. So these are very attractive rates in the current environment.
You know, it seems like, and this would be for a taxable account, obviously, like a traditional taxable account, the muni account we're talking about. Yeah. So it looks, there's two stories here, folks. There's the fixed income story, which we talked about, and the continuing appeal of that 4 to 5% yield. And there's a little mini boom in active management going on. So there's two stories here, and that seems to be attracting some significant dollars recently. Tell me about, let's talk about the active part. Why is active getting inflows?
Yeah, so there was a regulatory change just over 4 years ago by the SEC. They enacted what's known as the ETF rule. It actually brought new entrants into the market, traditional active managers, like MSIM managers, Eaton Vance, Parametric, to the market. Almost 20% of all active ETFs, over half a trillion in flows last year, went to active ETFs. If you look through that to fixed income specifically, Bob, I mentioned the core and the core plus. Right now, almost half of the leading core and core plus ETFs are actively managed. Some of the passive vehicles actually exclude sectors. And so with active management, you can bring in that unique bespoke approach.
Yeah. Joanna, I want to turn to you. The same question, though. I mean, the 4 to 5% yields, they're all in love with. My mother's in love with these things. I'm not kidding. My mother loves these yields. Is it going to continue in 2024?
I think the cash trade that people were trading in 2023 into U.S. Treasuries has been really important for investors to get cash on the sideline, enjoy these yields while they're here. We still think that income is going to be persistent in 2024 and beyond, and we think that that investors should still be looking at treasury yields and other types of bond investments, because even if rates do decline this year, where people are switching their focus is they're switching their focus to, yes, bonds are back in 2023, but in 2024, investors are getting back into bonds. So they're not only investing in U.S. Treasuries, they're actually looking at these as relative risk assets to the equity markets, which you mentioned. Like, your biggest mistake could be rushing back into equities before you're considering all these opportunities in fixed income. And so you know, yes, the cash trade and the 4 to 5% is great. We think that'll persist, and I think it'll be, you know, relatively, you know, still very good for investors. But investors should be stepping out into risk, and we like credit and we like duration.
Yeah, so let's talk about that. We last had you on last year. Short term was all the rage. Short maturity, short duration was all the rage. And you've been telling people to move out more into the intermediate end. And those who don't know, intermediate would, what, 3 to 7 years, right? Would that be more intermediate? Why the change? Why are we, should we be moving out here?
Well, we think we're at peak rates. So I think what people are looking at over the fence with the Fed is that sometime in 2024, it's projected the Fed will cut rates. It doesn't look like that's going to be the case for the first half of the year, but that's the expectation if inflation holds and inflation continues to decrease. But with a really resilient economy, you want to be investing in places where, you know, the economy is holding up these great investments in fixed income. And so if you go in the intermediate space, whether it's in credit or within treasuries, you're taking on some risk and you're going to benefit from a total return tailwind when rates go down. And there's a lot of high quality in corporations that have issued debt. And there's a lot of, I think plain, like pretty pragmatic, you know, trade here in just getting out of the short end of treasuries and moving in the intermediate space. So on both credit and on treasuries, we like intermediate.
So here's your chance how to explain how bond blocks works a little bit. Let's take the, put up the XHLF. This is the 6 month. It tracks investment results of an index of treasury securities. The duration is approximately 6 months. So explain how bond blocks works. If you can put up XH. There you go. Thank you.
So what we did with XHALF and we did with all of our treasury funds in bond blocks is pretty much they give you the same exposure as other treasury ETFs, but for two important differences. One is we focus on duration. And in our products, it's right on the name of the product. 6 month duration, 1 year duration. So XHALF has just 6 month duration. And that tells you exactly how much price volatility is going to be in your product. Now, for XHALF and X1, that's pretty straightforward if you're using it for cash. They're such low volatility, they're not going to move much, and they're a really great place to get off the sidelines with your cash. Where I think the product set really shines is in markets like 2024, where there's going to be an interest rate change in the short term. And so if you want to move out a little bit, you can do that with precision and bond blocks. It targets duration. It does. No other product in the market does it.
And duration is sensitivity to interest rates. I always have to make sure people understand, because they get duration and maturity confused sometimes.
Yeah, it's interest rate risk. And so what you would expect in 2024 towards the end is if interest rates go down, then the price of your bonds are going to go up. And in this market, that's a great thing. In 2023 and 2022, that made people nervous because as interest rates rise, the price of your bonds go down.
And, of course, there's bond blocks ETFs right out on the curve
on the curve.
Up to 30 years. In corporate bonds, most are still yielding north of 4%. And I talked to Tony about this. You like the riskier end, the triple B rated. That's the lowest investment grade, folks, on S&P. The yields here north of 5%.
North of 5%
right now. Is it, again, this sustainable? I'm talking about corporates now.
Yeah. So corporates are a really attractive place to start investing in, and have seen a lot of flows in the first quarter of this year. We like triple B. We think it's the place to be because it's the sweet spot of investment grade. If you think of the broad investment category, while this is the lowest part of the risk spectrum of investment grade, you don't pick up any incremental default risk for getting more yield and a better total return potential. And over 20 years, it's outperformed the broader category. So it's just a simple trade to, like, if you're gonna get back into credit and you're gonna get into, you know, investment grade bonds and corporates, like, start there with the triple Bs. Our favorite is the triple BI, which is the intermediate triple B. For all the reasons I explained, it probably has the best potential this year.
You like bonds an awful lot, the both of you. Is there anything you don't, other than like the short end, you were big on munis, you were big on, you launched another fund too.
Yeah.
You like corporates, you like treasuries? Yeah. Is there anything we don't like here?
Look, I think there's an opportunity cost for sitting in cash, and it is very attractive at 5% yield. But as Joanna said, and we would agree, we are seeing investors moving out on the duration and the maturity spectrum. One area that is interesting, though, is this insatiable demand for income. So we launched the Eaton Vance Floating Rate ETF almost 8 weeks ago. It's over $550 million.
EVLN is the symbol.
The
right?
Ticker is EVLN. We've been managing floating rates for over 35 years.
Now, explain floating. These are bank loans, right?
These are bank loans.
What do you own here when you buy this?
You own bank loans. And this is a category in, 1989, we helped pioneer in the mutual fund format.
When you say floating rate, they actually float, right? So it will move.
Consistent monthly income, and it does float. Right now, our objective is targeting a yield of approximately 9%. Now, even if rates go down, as Joanna highlighted, maybe they go down
a quarter. What's the maturity of typical floating rate loans? 5 years? What are they?
It depends on the actual issuance, yeah. Bob. But we would say even if rates go down, you're at 9%, they go down a half a point, two quarter of a point cuts, you're still at 8.5% yield on the floating rate.
And you're talking about munis as well. I was just talking to him about this. You launched a new ETF last month for munis, TAXX, right?
Yeah, TAXX. We're really excited about this because when you think about municipal bond portfolios, we really want people to think beyond them, actually, and look for the relative value of after-tax income. And so this portfolio works a little differently, and it seeks the best opportunity between municipal bonds and non-municipal bonds in the portfolio. And for a taxable account, as Tony mentioned, there's so much income in fixed income, you're really gonna be not used to paying some tax bills on your fixed income investments, but 2023 you will. So here, you should be mindful that you don't leave any money on the table with an after-tax yield or after-tax return by seeking all the opportunities in bond funds.
So what kind of after-tax return is TAXX going to have?
The portfolio's the tax equivalent yield is close to 6%. It's about 5.88 as you look at it. And when you compare that to the big trade when interest rates were really low was going into short duration credit funds to help you step out into cash and use those funds. And so while the yield looks similar on the paper, if you're not thinking about the tax equivalent yield, it's just the year to be thinking about taxes.
Well, 6%, I'm thinking again of my mother, my 95-year-old mother, who's delighted she's getting 4, 4.5, whatever, in her one-year bank CDs. But there's a big difference between 4.5 and 6% yield at this point. So the point here seems to be, most investors will call me and say, Bob, you're making me crazy trying to figure out whether I should move into this splitting hairs. But 4% and 6% is actually a pretty big difference in returns overall. So they're all not, all these bond funds are not the same. That's my point here, Tony, right?
Yeah, and one of the things that the ETF wrapper enables investors to do, both institutions who use these now and also financial advisors, is really get that precise exposure. They can do it through floating rate. They can do it through municipal. I think what's interesting is there's actively managed ETFs now, and there's also certainly passively managed. Some advisors are using passively managed fixed income ETFs to actively manage a portfolio, if you think about it.
Yeah, so tactically.
Tactically. Yeah. So they're adjusting the exposure based on a building block approach or based on going straight to Eaton Vance.
I'm talking to the choir here, but do you think actively managed bond funds have a certain advantage over actively managed stock funds? We've debated this for years. The track record of active management equities has not been great long term. We know all the studies that indicate most of the time they don't actually outperform, even though they say in volatile times they will. Is there any evidence that you think that actively managed, and I know we're talking to the guy who runs the big organization here, but is there any evidence that it works any better, active management in bond?
I'm quite certain there's evidence on both sides. What I can tell you, though, is investors want choice, and they want to be able to allocate. And it's not uncommon to see a financial advisor who has passive exposures alongside active. Very few are one or the other. Many use both. Yeah. So I think
That is the smart answer, Joanna, right? We just give people choice, right? So he avoids the academic debate about this, but your thoughts on this?
Well, I think you summed it up really.
You're sort of neutral on all of this, right?
We're generally neutral. We see it as Tony does, I think, which is we don't have a philosophy on one is better than the other. What we think is really important is that clients and investors need help in these markets. They need help from their advisors, and their advisors need help from managers like bond blocks and income research and management that's working on the tax fund. Because when you think about all this big opportunity set we all just described, and you're trying to make sense of it, An active manager in fixed income has insights, has a way to help you make your next decision. And that's what's important about, I think, active management and provider choice. And that's how I see it.
I'm just happy, and to pick up Tony's point about choice, but maybe not in the way he says it. I'm just happy that, you know, you have 10-year yields north of 4%,
yeah,
because it's so much more normal. What's not normal is to give
zero.
The government money for 10 years at 1%. That's just not normal. It's crazy. Who would do that? And yet people were forced to do that. Now savers have some way to actually have a real inflation adjusted positive return, which is it's about time, for crying out loud. What's been abnormal, and I know we had viewers complain, they're worried about it, 30-year mortgages going to 6 or 7%, but that's what's normal. What's not normal is 3% 30-year mortgages. People thought that this was historical. It's not. It never was. So what I'm happy about is things are getting a little more normal the way they should. I don't know if I'm being preachy or not. But
we hear that from the clients we work with that, you know, as I said at the outset, bonds are back. And when you look at the allocation, equity, fixed, and other, you know, private vehicles, more and more you can see active management happening in the fixed income sleeve. We haven't seen yields like this since before the credit crisis.
Yeah.
And I think investors, you know, are pleased. Here's the real question, though, is that opportunity cost for cash.
Yeah.
You've seen the S&P 500 go up 25% since late October, right? So as investors think about how do I get off the sideline.
Higher yields have not crushed the stock market.
Yes.
They have not.
But whether they want to go back into the equity market or now they have choice in the fixed income market.
So
I think that's
I know you're not an academic, but we've had 40 years of declining yields, essentially, since Volcker broke the back of inflation in 82. It's been really 40 years of I guess you'd call it a bond bear market if you want to look at it that way. But that seems to be ending right now. And do you agree? And is that a good thing? It seems to me a good thing at these levels, at least. I don't want it, you know, interest rates going through the roof and crushing the economy. But your thoughts?
Yeah, well, we'll see. I mean, the economy is very strong right now. Yeah. We don't know what rates are going to do this year. If they get cut one, maybe three more times, it remains to be seen. But right now, we know our investors are expressing a view into fixed income ETFs more and more.
The other issues, of course, I'm sounding like an academic here. I'm talking to, you know, Wall Street people about academics, and they hate doing this, by the way. Inflation, global inflation, how it's changing. If you look at what's been going on with the global supply chain, with globalization or deglobalization, you know, when you're talking about putting a new fab factory in New Mexico, billions of dollars. That's going to reduce the efficiency of the supply chains. And there's a reason inflation's a little higher and should be higher, and interest rates should be
a little
higher.
I think, too, there's also the differentiation in all the markets and in inflation and different economies. Everything's performing differently. And I think that's another tenet of bond blocks coming to market, is that you can start to see the differentiation of these opportunities in fixed income, which you couldn't see with zero interest rates before. They didn't jump off the page as they do today. And there's a lot of opportunity that needs to be. We have to remind people of the fundamentals of bonds again.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
how total return works, that it's income and price appreciation, and what happens when interest rates impact those things. And so I think that's another thing we're finding, is this massive re-engagement with this more normal bond space and rate space that we all lived through and remember.
So what does this mean for the ETF space? More mutual fund conversions from bond funds continuing? I mean, this has slowly been going on.
Just over a year into this, Bob, we've launched 14 ETFs. We were just over $1.7 billion at the end of the first quarter. Two of the 14 are actually conversions. We'll continue to evaluate our existing mutual fund lineup for conversions, but we're also committed to launching organic new. I do think a number of organizations have looked at converting, but we'll evaluate one by one.
Yeah, I think the important thing is investors are finally getting yield and they're responding to that. So more product is fine with me. Active is fine with me, providing the fees still remain low. I'm a Jack Bogle guy, remember? Jack like active, as long as the fees stayed low. So we're keeping an eye on that for everybody. Thank you both. Very informative. Now it's time to round out the conversation with some analysis and perspective to help you better understand ETFs. This is the Markets 102 portion of the podcast. Let's talk more about bonds with Joanna Galagos, co-founder of BondBlocks. And Joanna, one of the things that's quite amazing, you and I were just talking about, is the bond flows. When I had you on last year, it was sometime in the middle of the year, we were generally still seeing outflows in the first quarter of 2023 in bonds. People were fleeing them. Then we started to see some modest inflows in the second quarter, and then it sort of just exploded towards the end of the year. Inflows increased rather dramatically into corporates in general. Fixed income was just huge. Yeah. It's still huge, maybe not as much as it was in the three quarters of last year. But people seem to really love their 4 and 5% yields, and we've commented for a long time how sticky the money is in money market funds as well.
Yeah, and the other thing they're doing is they're trusting the resiliency of the economy. In 2022, we probably didn't know which end was up. And in 2023, we're sort of waiting for something to happen in the economy. We kept getting positive earnings quarter over quarter, positive employment numbers, and decreasing inflation. And it probably was a lot to figure out and trust in 2023 because we had bank failures and there was a lot going on. But maybe by the end of the year, in the fourth quarter, we get to this peak, not only in rates, but also something we can see over the edge of. And I think people are trusting the resilient economy as well. And so they're willing to take on more risk right now. I think that's what the fourth quarter was about. It was maybe like, okay, now's the time I'm going to come back in to bonds finally. And we saw a shift from short duration and short side of the curve treasury flows into credit and core bond exposures. So that was an interesting first quarter.
So the important thing is, because you're now getting 4 or 5% yield, you can reasonably talk about having bond exposures as a significant part of your portfolio. You know, the 60-40 or 75-25 or whatever proportion you want is back. 2 years ago, there was nobody at any ETF conference I attended to that was no professional financial advisor, no RIA, who was talking about, oh, I'm 60-40 stocks bonds.
People were manufacturing income and low vol out of equity products by using derivatives because they understood equity risk better than they understood bond risk back last year and the last few years, and certainly in the low interest rate environment. And so you got to the point where people were grabbing for so much yield and they were trying to find, you know, low vol investments and income at the same time, and they forgot that's what bonds do. And now bonds with 4 and 5% interest rates as a base rate plus credit risk and spread, now it's normal. Like you said, it's back to the way it's supposed to be functioning in your portfolio. And you may need to get more familiar with the different sectors of fixed income and how they work.
Yeah.
Because you've been so focused on equities for so long.
Well, what's interesting is you can do 4% in, you know, 10-year yield, treasury yields. But as you were talking, you have a muni product with a 6% effective yield. Tax equivalent.
Yeah.
Thank you. That's the correct word.
Yeah.
That's actually a big difference in the fixed income world between 4% and 6%. That's a fairly big difference.
Yeah, you shouldn't be leaving anything on the table with fixed income right now, certainly not any money related to taxes and income. And this portfolio optimizes across all the sectors in fixed income to deliver your best tax-advantaged return and yield. And that just seems smart because it's actually, in some market environments, it's smarter to pay the tax and grab more yield than it is to just go straight to munis. And we partnered with this amazing manager, Income Research and Management. They've been doing these strategies for 20 plus years. They've been managing them for the biggest home offices and institutional investors. And we're so excited to bring tax to market, which is TAXX. I don't think investors have had these choices before.
Yeah. Well, as I said, 4% and 6% is pretty high. And what's amazing to me is we've had this incredible run in equities. We're up 25% in 5 months. We're up 10% for the first quarter of the year. That's a really remarkable run. I did a story last week. There's only been six or seven times since 1950 where you've had a run of 25% or more in the S&P 500 consecutive monthly, months in a row. And yet we're still seeing significant inflows into bonds. People love these yields. It's remarkable to me. You'd think there'd be a lot more FOMO, but people seem content. And what is that emblematic of?
I think people recognizing the low volatility comparison between bond sectors and equity sectors. And understanding all the concentrations and that equity risk that we've been following, you know, for several years, especially within the last year or so. I think people are getting smarter about this market. I believe investors in the market is absorbing the fact that rates are going to be higher for longer, and that there's opportunity for the next 1 to 2 years. Companies are, their debt is in demand. Corporate issuance in the first quarter
was enormous and was just
and you're gobbled
not worried
up.
About and too so, much debt. I mean, we see the federal government's going to issue trillions of dollars this year in new debt. And we keep saying, who's going to buy it? We kept saying the Chinese aren't buying as much anymore. The Japanese aren't. They were one third of the bond market, the government bond market.
I think people feel a little topsy-turvy, really, you know, equity returns like that and concentrations in risk at equities. You know, I don't think it feels great to be at all-time equity highs, knowing what's underpinning some of the economics of our markets and also our economy. So I think that that's another reason people are looking to bonds, because they understand how their returns work explicitly. They're based on debt. It's a different part of the corporate structure if something goes wrong. So there's that appeal as well.
Yeah. All right, Joanna, it's been a pleasure talking with you again. I'm delighted to hear. I mean, you're putting out new products. I mean, that's a sign that there's a demand, right?
Definitely.
The fact that we're seeing, I don't know if there's more new ETF bond products than equity products, but there certainly seems to be a flurry of them.
Lot of great capability that's coming to market. We're working with amazing firms like Income Research and Management to build more capability for investors to focus on it. A lot more to come from BondBlocks.
All right. Joanna Galagos, head of BondBlocks, thank you very much for joining us. And that does it for ETF Edge, the podcast. Thanks for listening. Join us again next week or head to our website, etfedge.cnbc.com.
Invesco QQQ believes new innovations create new opportunities. Become an agent of innovation. Invesco QQQ. Invesco Distributors, Inc.